Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome to another edition of Sly's Office. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, I thought I'd start out with a local story today, at least a Wisconsin story. This is unbelievable. This is from NBC 12 from the Wausau market. Here's a story of something that happened in Vilas County.
Justin, this picture circulated widely on Facebook. It shows a Conover man walking his dog on Highway K in a Ku Klux Klan robe. Vilas County Sheriff Joe Fath said his department got a call about this man on the 12th, so that's last Friday, at 9 p.m. It was the first of at least three calls his department received.
We received a call that a gentleman was walking on Highway K by Monheim Road wearing a white Ku Klux Klan robe, drinking a beer and waving at traffic.
Sheriff Fath confirmed the man as Charles Michael Booth of Conover. According to court records back in 2013, Booth was found guilty of criminal damage to property. Sheriff Fath said Booth was not creating a traffic problem on Friday, adding it's not illegal to walk up and down a road.
It should not have bothered anybody. I realized that may be offensive to some people, but it's not a crime.
Former Confederate soldiers formed the KKK after the end of the Civil War. The hate group has a history of racism, including lynchings of black people.
It should not have bothered anybody.
Yeah, what is he? I mean, and he wasn't creating a traffic problem.
Well, no. And then he said, some may be offended. Some.
Yeah. Well, pause with me here. If you're driving down a country road and you see a guy in a Klan outfit, I mean, remembering, by the way,
at night, drinking a beer, walking his dog,
and waving, right? And just remember with me, if you will, that the Ku Klux Klan, first and foremost, a racist organization formed to terrorize African Americans, also went out of its way to terrorize Jews and Catholics and ultimately, in some places, union members, and, you know, it's a pretty long list.
They made some pretty big appearances in Madison.
Well, this is the interesting thing. You know, the Cap Times celebrated its 100th anniversary not long ago. In the book, Dave Zwickel and I wrote about the Cap Times, we wrote about a substantial section of the book about one of the really jarring incidents was when the Klan marched in what was the Greenbush neighborhood,
sure,
which was a multiracial, multi-ethnic neighborhood. There they were marching. I won't try to get into their heads, but they were definitely anti-Catholic, anti-immigrant.
Well, yes, that was during Prohibition, if I'm not mistaken.
It was in the midst of Prohibition.
Yeah.
And there was all kinds of ugly overlays with it. And the Cap Times, which at that time was considered, you know, relatively bold gesture, said this is a bad idea, and militantly opposed them. But the best opposition to the Klan in Wisconsin, and more power to him, was Dan Hone, socialist mayor over in Milwaukee. And when he got wind that the Klan might be coming to Milwaukee, he said they better not, because they will find Milwaukee is hotter than hell. And
well,
he went out of his way to push him back.
That sheriff's response kind of indicates to me some people still don't get it.
Well, did you see the Journal Sentinel article on this?
I did.
That where there was a legislative aide, right, who said something, I hope I quote it right here. It's an aide to Republican Janelle Branchon of Menominee Falls claimed on Facebook he wasn't even aware the KKK existed.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sort of like, maybe we need to do a little more education here, but I just don't buy it. I don't buy that when people say, especially in these times, at this moment, I don't I don't see it. I don't think they exist or whatever. Or in the case of this law enforcement officer saying that it's not creating a problem, or some people might be offended. Come on, I mean this is really and I have to tell you, as somebody who's spent a lot of time in northern Wisconsin, knows a lot of people up there. There are a lot of people in northern Wisconsin who would be profoundly offended and who would stand up to this.
So the Atlanta situation, not the same as the Minneapolis situation. And at first, when I first saw that story, I thought, well, he stole his taser. And, you know, when you take somebody's taser, you can't, you know, you're a danger. But as details have leaked out in this story, it turns out there were no more rounds in the taser. And the behavior by the officers after they shot the suspect, Rashard Brooks, is so horrifying to me. They knew there were cameras on them. They knew that everything else that was going on right now, but they were so angry. The police officers were so angry that they had lost control of their taser that they took a bad situation and made it even worse.
The video was so, the images are so horrible. And so you said initially, and I understand that it's different from the George Floyd circumstance. And of course, some of the details are different. But again, here we have this circumstance where you see a video, you know, you see an image of what happened, and it's not so different. At a fundamental level, what you see is people who should be trained to handle these situations, handling them horrifically. I mean, just in the worst of all possible ways. And you do have to ask yourself, you know, if there was a circumstance where somebody was drunk, right, grabbed a taser or something like that, would it be the same if it was an African-American man or a white person?
Now, I do not agree with the people that are saying that, oh, they just should have called an Uber. First of all, no one should call an Uber. That's a terrible company. But I don't believe that the police made a mistake by arresting him. I don't think we should loosen laws on drunk driving. By the way, I don't agree with making the first one a felony, and I don't think in Georgia it is. But I don't think sending people home in cabs that pass out in drive-thrus is the answer. But I do think understanding that when somebody is not an imminent threat, using lethal force has terrible consequences.
It does. And you know, look, ultimately, as a society, we're going to have to figure out ways to deal with circumstances like this, right? And there are a lot of circumstances where the police are called to handle a disturbance, right, a challenge. And this can be a neighborhood argument. It can be a homeless issue. It can be a public drunkenness or whatever you want to say issue. It could be a school challenge, and many, many of them. What's happening around the country in some places is that, like Eugene, Oregon, San Francisco's now looking at this, is developing a force of professionals who will probably be uniformed. And you know, you got a situation like this, you send them in, and they've got a whole host of tactics to de-escalate a situation, to deal with a challenge. If ultimately there needs to be arrest, then they call the police on in. But it's that you don't let it get to this point.
Yeah, but I'm not blaming the police for responding to a call of somebody passed out in a motor vehicle.
In the circumstances.
No. And there's a legislator in Alabama that has introduced legislation that would make mandatory driver's education and teaching young people how to respond when they're pulled over by a police officer. And that's probably not a bad idea. And obviously, you know, everybody's going to have to work together so these situations don't escalate. I don't know what was going on in Mr. Brooks' mind, why he responded in the way that he had this. You know, what's funny is, you know, the first 40 minutes of that whole situation, both sides were behaving civilly to each other. And why that exploded the way that he did, was it the fact that they didn't say you're under arrest before they put the handcuffs on him? I don't know, but it's so sad. You know, there was a movie with Robert Duvall that talked about this with the L.A. police force 20, 30 years ago on how these things escalate and how they turn out so tragically. And I don't know what the answer is.
Well, what I'll say is this. At a certain point, when you talk about 20, 30 years, remember, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about police violence, police brutality in his speeches in the early 1960s. You know, the Kerner Report in the late 60s talked about, you know, these issues. And then, interestingly enough, when the Kerner Report was being done, they had witnesses who came in and talked about things from 50 years before that, you know. And so clearly what we have to concern ourselves with is the need for the police to have the skills to de-escalate. Because we understand that there's going to be circumstances where somebody has challenges, where, you know, it may be drinking, it may be drugs, it may be mental illness, it may be a host of other issues, or it may just be, you know, late night and, you know, wrong people, wrong place, wrong time, things like that. Whatever it is, the police have to be able to de-escalate this without somebody ending up dead. When you've got somebody who is not posing a lethal threat, and so I understand what the Alabama legislator is proposing, and I think, you know, everybody can get good counsel on these things, right? But at the end of the day, you know, it's the police officer's the person there with the gun, right? And so that individual.
Well, sometimes both parties have a gun, but.
That is true, but then that's fine. That takes you to a different place, right? Right.
But
that,
sometimes the police don't. Sometimes the police don't know who has a gun. Now this man had been. This man had been patted down. It's an interesting thing. Now it's been kind of a one-sided conversation so far. You know, there are departments that have made huge strides, and I think we do need to give those departments credit. Madison, you know, the statistics, they really break this down on how and when they use force of any type, where they even touch a suspect. And I think they have made incredible progress on this. So I guess my biggest problem is that I think this gets nationalized and people make a lot of broad sweeping statements without any nuance whatsoever.
I think that can happen, but I think also, look, what's happening right now is the opening of a discussion about how to take everything the next step.
Is it a discussion? And, is it a discussion, though?
Well, I think there is a lot of discussion.
Really? I don't think it's a discussion yet. Because it's not a discussion until police officers are part of the discussion, and right now they're back on their heels.
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing. In San Francisco, the mayor of San Francisco announced a series of major changes in the San Francisco Police Department, including, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot, which is demilitarization of the police, i.e., that you really, they don't need tanks, right?
Well, I'm going to push back a little. You know, that's a loaded word, but, you know, there are vehicles, for instance, in the riots in Sherman Park in 2016, there were people being held hostage as a gas station burned. And yet the police officers were getting shot at. The police used one of those armored vehicles to rescue hostages, and the Dane County Sheriff's Department has used vehicles to rescue hostages when somebody is shooting at them and people are trapped in an imminent situation. Is that militarization?
I'm still going to say not that you don't need the tank.
But you need an armored vehicle.
You may need. Look, I'm not expert enough.
Well, but that's, but you see, that's why we can't use these loaded words. See, this is where you and I disagree. These loaded words that make broad, sweeping generalizations. No. Do I want our police looking like an invading brigade? No. But I think you have to take each and every one of these situations and analyze them to, well, why do you have that? And if they can say they have a reasonable explanation, I don't think you can label everything the same.
And I'm not going to argue that, but what I'm going to say is I still think you can use the term demilitarization.
I don't like that term.
I know you don't. Okay, so we're going to agree that you don't like it. I do like it.
It's loaded. It is just like defund the police. I think they're asinine terms.
Well, I don't. And so,
well, I do.
But here, there you go.
And it's my it's my podcast.
It's your podcast. But let me offer a couple more things to the mayor.
This is why we're not having discussion right now.
We are having.
You and I are having a discussion, but there is not a public discussion.
So let me finish up what I was saying there, because it's good. Okay, the mayor talked about demilitarization of the police, and that's getting rid of equipment that ultimately isn't about de-escalating situations and isn't about really making things.
But the Pollyannish attitude that people are never in danger and the police need the resources to rescue people in imminent danger when they're being shot at is something that is not inconsequential.
Not inconsequential, so let's keep going here. Also talked about creating a separate unit or a separate model in San Francisco where when you call in, if you're in a situation, again, neighborhood dispute, a homeless situation, maybe drug and alcohol situation, perhaps a school dispute, where they've got trained professionals who are not armed, who go to dial down DSA.
I asked Chief Koval about that. He said, that's great, but in many cases, people are armed, or they don't know if they're armed, and there has to be some sort of security available in case things get violent.
And there is, just as there is in Great Britain. But, you know, that unarmed police officers, by the way, who handle a lot of challenges and really often very severe challenges, can call in backup. They could call that in. And so that's, when you're talking about, you know, getting into the nuance of things, that's the nuance of it. And that's an important one. So anyway, talking about this, talking about doing that, talking about a number of other issues, and the mayor of San Francisco had the police chief standing next to him, talking about how they've already done some of these things and how they're going to do more of it and how they're going to make it work. And so the fact of the matter is that there are places where dialogue is occurring or people are really wrestling with ideas here. It's hard because we're going into big discussions that really are about how to change a lot of things and how we approach a lot of things.
And all I'm saying, and we got to wrap this segment up, is the people that we send in to respond to calls that are needed, that are armed, that are the police, law enforcement, need to be part of the discussion. All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com. I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us. All right, so John Bolton's book came out. This is from ABC.
The accusations are explosive. John Bolton, at the president's side for some of our country's most vital national security decisions, calling Trump erratic, irrational, foolish, and stunningly uninformed, believing Finland was part of Russia, unaware Britain is a nuclear power, and said Bolton, Trump was not always truthful.
Is the president lying?
Yes, he is. And it's not the first time either.
Bolton also saying the president was marked by foreign leaders, from North Korea's Kim Jong-un to Russia's Vladimir Putin. Bolton telling us in an exclusive interview, the Russian leader, like others, was eager to meet Trump alone, without advisors, so he could flatter and manipulate.
How would you describe Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin?
I think Putin thinks he can play him like a fiddle. I think Putin is smart, tough. I think he sees that he's not faced with a serious adversary here. I don't think he's worried about Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, as we say, sees himself as a deal maker. What happened to the deal maker in those situations?
Well, the president may well be a superb deal maker when it comes to Manhattan real estate, dealing with arms limitation treaties on strategic weapons, dealing in many, many other international security issues are things far removed from his life experience. When you're dealing with somebody like Putin, who has made his life understanding Russia's strategic position in the world, against Donald Trump, who doesn't enjoy reading about these issues or learning about them, it's a very difficult position for America to be in.
Bolton was criticized for not testifying during the president's impeachment last year, saying now it was because the focus was too narrow and politicized, and that Congress should have investigated Trump for additional possible impeachable offenses, charging that Trump attempted to intervene in criminal probes with foreign adversaries as personal favors to dictators he liked. In his new book, out June 23rd, and in our interview, Bolton also says he heard firsthand from Trump that security aid to Ukraine was directly tied to his requests that Joe Biden and others be investigated by the Ukrainian president, which Bolton says he himself found deeply disturbing. Bolton saying he was alarmed at what he described as obstruction of justice as a way of life, adding that foremost on Trump's mind at all times was re-election. I am hard-pressed to identify any significant Trump decision during my tenure that wasn't driven by re-election calculations. One example, says Bolton, the president asking China's President Xi to buy soybeans and wheat to help win the support of farmers, quote, pleading with Xi to ensure he'd win.
And Martha Raddatz with us live tonight.
We didn't even get to the concentration camps yet. A lot of people are criticizing John Bolton today. I have no criticism. John Bolton isn't the issue here. We're in a re-election campaign, there's one issue, and it's Donald Trump.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to do a little criticism of Bolton.
Really? Is he the issue?
Yeah, I'm going to basically do a little bit up front.
Is he the issue?
I'm going to basically agree with you. No, he's not the issue. But, I mean, is there more, like, I don't know, just bizarre figure ever? I mean, I hope nobody ever calls John Bolton a patriot. Okay.
No, he's not.
Because the fact of the matter is, here's a guy who, whenever he could intervene and actually make a difference, right? You know, in the immediate moment, he's like, holds back. I don't know. I don't want to go rush in there, right? And then, you know, when the moment is passed, well, then he jumps in, right? And then he's like, oh yeah, I got a book to sell. And so I'm not a John Bolton fan.
Well, however, nor am I.
However, I know. But however, with that set up front, your core point that this is an election year. And that so now we had the impeachment moment when we should have impeached and removed Donald Trump. Now we have the election moment where we have the potential to complete the job that Republican senators wouldn't do, and that is remove him. Bolton stuff comes then as evidence in that circumstance. And I have to tell you, it's pretty jarring stuff. Also, like so many of the books that have been written about the Trump White House, it's entirely believable, isn't it? I mean, is there anything here you're like, oh, I cannot believe that Donald Trump didn't know about Finland.
Didn't know the Brits had nukes.
Yeah, I absolutely. Those are 100% believable things. And also, two other elements here, too. The sort of offhand comment. I'm going to paraphrase it, isn't inclined to read about these things, i.e., this guy's president, he's not learning anymore.
Right. By the way, he didn't know China and India shared a border. There is something going on with the border in China and India right now.
Just about everything, by the way. Nuclear powers, by the way. So number one, right, you know, that he didn't know much. Number two, he's not inclined to learn. And number three, everything he's doing is about re-election. And Those are three core points, separate from a lot of the really scary facts that come out, right? And they are disqualifying, right? You can go into the details as regards China, as regards ignorance of world situations that is very compelling, as regards relations with Putin, all these other things. You go into all that, but if you just step back from it and say, doesn't know much, doesn't want to learn, obsessed with himself and his reelection, that ought to be the argument for any rational person.
So what's interesting, though? I love reading about the mob, and the mob in Montreal is huge, and there was a leader named Vito Rizzuto who was incredibly powerful, but incredibly smart. And he had this code of ethics where he essentially got all the different gangs in Montreal to work with one another with as little violence as possible. And when he went to jail, everything fell apart. But he was smart, and he had this code of ethics. Donald Trump is kind of like a mobster, but a really dumb one, who's completely transactional. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if I'd insult the mob quite there. They have other problems.
Well, do you understand what I mean?
Look, Donald Trump, I understand what you're trying to get at here.
He's not just a crook. He's an incompetent crook. Dumbass.
And that's a subtle phrase that gets close to the point.
It's a great thing about podcasting.
Yeah, well...
I'd say that on the air. Who am I kidding?
I know you would. Yeah, you might get bumped a little bit, but have you been hearing Springsteen talking about Trump recently?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Put on your mask. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's another word.
There's another word.
And so here we get to the heart of the matter, though. And this is important stuff. You're describing a criminal who had a code of ethics and, as you describe it, and who, kept some stability, right? What happens when you have somebody who is president of the United States, who has all the powers of the presidency of the United States, who doesn't have a code of ethics, doesn't, try to manage things in a responsible way, and who is frankly leading one party in our politics, the Republican Party, deeper and deeper into his own morass, right? Making a major political party an expression of himself, right? And that's where we get to the bigger deal as regards Bolton, because Bolton is clearly one of those people who, is of the old kind of camp that wants to get the Republican Party back to the quote-unquote good old days when, like, Bush and Cheney were in charge.
Yeah, right? those were great days, weren't they?
That's what I'm talking about. So what we have to understand here is this is a big deal. You must ultimately, in my view, reject not just Trump, but we also ultimately have to say, well, thanks for this information, Mr. Bolton, but we reject people like you as well, right? Yeah. That ultimately that the sustainers of the Republican Party that became the ground on which Donald Trump would operate have to be rejected along with
Trump. So I watched Fox last night, so you didn't have to, but I wanted to see what would happen on Hannity. I hadn't watched Hannity forever, right? The newly divorced, proud Catholic Sean Hannity. Okay, so Donald Trump was on for a considerable period of time. Here's what Donald Trump said.
Well, first of all, nobody has been tougher on Russia or China than I have. Nobody even close. China's paying us billions of dollars a year. They never gave us 10 cents. And Biden's son walked away with $1.5 billion to manage, making hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars on it. So nobody has been tough on China, and nobody has been tough on Russia like I have. And that's in the record books, and it's not even close. The last administration did nothing on either. And then in terms of Bolton, he broke the law. He was a washed-up guy. I gave him a chance. He couldn't get Senate confirmed, so I gave him a non-Senate confirmed position where I could just put him there, see how he worked. And I wasn't very enamored. He went into the Middle East. He was one of the big—
Yeah, we'll see how he worked. Like he was stocking shelves at Kroger. National Security Advisor.
I gave him a chance.
He put the green beans where the mushrooms were supposed to go.
Made him an assistant manager at the Walmart.
So Was that a denial of anything in John Bolton's book?
No. And that's the interesting thing. Nobody's been tougher on China than me. Something tells me the Chinese don't necessarily see it that way. My sense is that the Chinese, much like a lot of other authoritarian regimes around the world, see Trump as a guy they can play, right? And what they well understand is they can't play him every time because somebody else may be playing him that day, right? Who they're at odds with, but he is ignorant enough, not knowing where the borders are and things like that.
Tiananmen Square was 15 years ago.
Yeah, and if you can't play him today, I think the view of the Chinese is they can play him tomorrow. And what we learn here is that they all know how to play Donald Trump. Every one of them does. And what the answer is that he is obsessed with re-election. What does Ukraine, the whole Ukraine controversy, draws back to? Biden is at that point his likely opponent. What does Bolton bring out about China? Ooh, can you help me with some trade, flexibility as we head toward an election, 2020 election once again. Again and again and again, what we default to is this is a man who was not good at what he did in business, went bankrupt 4 times, didn't pay people, got in trouble, ultimately had basically a shell operation that, was all about branding rather than actually doing a lot of stuff. And then went into reality TV and frankly was having trouble in reality TV and then decides, I'm not very good at business. I'm not very good at TV. Maybe I'll be president, right? So Trump needs to be understood as somebody who sort of, defaulted into this position and is desperate to keep it.
A.B. Stoddard on Brian Williams' show last night said this notion that somehow if Bolton had testified, it would have changed these senators' minds. She pointed out Bolton's friends with all these senators. Every one of these senators knew what was coming out in that book.
Yeah, that's the biggest lie in the world, is the suggestion that Ron Johnson, let's not talk about senators in general, let's talk about Ron Johnson. The biggest lie in the world is the suggestion that Ron Johnson could be shamed or educated to do the right thing.
All right, finally, if I were running for political office or a president, I would treasure all Americans, but I would especially treasure the people that support me, right? You don't necessarily curry favor with them in a way that is unfair to others, but as a human being, you would think that your supporters would be precious to you, right? This is the news from Oklahoma City last night. They were covering what's going on in Tulsa. This is the local news covering Donald Trump's upcoming event.
Yet another record-breaking increase. Oklahoma adding 259 more new cases today, as our case totals so far are right now soaring above anything our state has seen. Our numbers spiking despite testing being down the last couple of weeks. Now, as for hospitalizations, death rates, those remain steady. Thanks for watching. I'm Evan Onstein.
Good evening to you at 6 o'clock. I'm Abigail Ogle. And the entire country really watching Oklahoma right now as President Donald Trump is set to restart his rallies again in Tulsa this weekend. We have team coverage for you of this tonight, starting with KOCO's Dylan Richards. And Dylan, you're talking to our top state officials about their response to the virus.
Abigail, I am. They say they are watching this case increase very closely, but of course, pointing out that the death rate and hospitalization rate still remains relatively low. All of this comes, of course, as Oklahoma appears set to host what is likely to be the largest gathering indoors in this country in months.
I told the president he is absolutely welcome to come to Oklahoma anytime he wants.
Governor Kevin Stitt says he'll introduce the president at Saturday's rally.
There's a lot of people who are really worried about having a rally of this size. What do you say to people who are worried about?
We're a free society, and you're free to stay home, and I want people to protect their family. If they don't want to go to the rally, they shouldn't.
Another record increase in cases today, although hospitalizations have not seen the same type of increase. Health officials say that could be in part because more young people are getting the virus. One big question for Oklahoma Health Commissioner Colonel Lance Fry, what's causing this spike?
Once you reopen, we are expecting an increase in numbers, quite frankly, because as people get out and they move around more, you're going to have more increased contact and you are going to have increase in numbers.
As Tulsa's top health official says he thinks the rally should be postponed, what does Fry think?
Do you think this rally is a good idea?
It's not my place to say whether I think a rally is a good idea or not. All I can do is give you the public health opinion of follow the CDC guidelines and try to keep yourself safe.
Try to keep yourself safe. That is just stunning.
It is a shocking thing. And you realize, I think it was Axios today, might have been this morning as we talked, had a piece that says that Trump's now trying to ramp this thing up. Now, Trump's running around claiming, oh, millions of people want to come to this. It's going to be the biggest thing ever, blah, blah, blah. But there's quite a bit of evidence that Trump isn't just holding a rally. He's really trying to go all in to get a big crowd. So they're talking about flying in entertainment, flying in celebrity speakers from around the country. I mean, they're trying to make it.
Yes, you know, and they're setting up an overflow area.
Yeah, and so what you're really dealing with here is a president who is, he isn't just calling an event and saying, hey, let's have a rally, let's step forward, you know, and you know, not worry about these things, blah, blah, blah. He's actively trying to make it something that people feel they just have to come to, right? Now, I think an awful lot of rational people are going to say, I don't have to come to that. I'm not going to do that, including even some of his supporters, I'll say, will choose not to for good reason. But the truth of the matter is, what he's doing here is playing the most dangerous game. And you're right. He's playing it with his own supporters. He is exploiting them. He is exploiting them for an image, right? For attention and a clip related to his reelection.
In a state that he won by 36 points, he won every county in that state. So it's not like this has electoral significance.
Ah, well, who knows? But
he's not even doing this. He's not even doing this in a state that is significant in the election.
If it was Michigan or Wisconsin or someplace like that, where, you know, the polls do show that you still have competition, or Arizona or North Carolina or Florida, you can list a lot of states. But to do it in Oklahoma, and again, we get back to that core question of why is he in Oklahoma? Why did he choose to go to Oklahoma? And why did they initially propose to go to Oklahoma on Juneteenth, right? I mean, the ugliness of this president's calculations and the symbolism and the choices that he makes in combination with the cruelty of it. I can't say anything more than that this is a person who's truly unworthy.
I can tell you, this is a little inside baseball, but had Mick Cornett, the former mayor of Oklahoma City, become the governor, or Drew Edmondson, the former attorney general, this event would not be happening.
Well, in fact, that's why when you said, oh, this doesn't have electoral consequences, the fact of the matter is Oklahoma has shown an openness to electing some Democrats. Doesn't always do so. It's a more Republican state. There's no question of that. But I just think Donald Trump is doing things at this point. I realize it's unrealistic probably to imagine that a breaking point comes, but boy, it sure seems like if there's anybody who's actually trying to get Oklahoma to reject him, it's Donald Trump.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's office.
I appreciate it, sir.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.